Welcome to the Free Press Matters podcast. We're so glad you're back with us again. We are also very glad to be joined in studio here by, and I don't like using this word, but I don't think I can think of another one that fits so well. Legendary journalist, broadcast journalist, Ted Koppel. Mr. Koppel has been a broadcaster working in journalism since the Kennedy assassination, and actually even before that. So that's decades of innovative, groundbreaking work. Always challenging, always smart journalism, and always journalism that asks his audience to think a little harder, think a little bit deeper, and perhaps think a little bit differently. Mr. Koppel, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. And if I can get away with calling you Doug, you'd better call me Ted.
Ted Koppel, what does this phrase, fake news, mean to you?
Well, it's come to mean a great many different things in the age of President Trump, but it is a phrase that has been used periodically over the decades to undermine public confidence in journalism. That's not to suggest that fake news doesn't exist. Indeed, in this age of the internet, I fear that there is probably more fake news around than there is real news. But it's incumbent upon people listening to the news, reading the news, watching the news, to carefully examine the credentials of those who are presenting it to them. We live in an age now that is often referred to as the democratization of journalism. Used to be, when I was a young journalist, unless you had access to a television network or a radio network or a major magazine like Time or Newsweek or Life magazine, you didn't have access to a national or indeed even a global audience. These days, anyone with an iPhone, anyone with access to the internet, also has access to quite literally millions of people out there. The danger is that means you have a lot of amateurs out there who may know nothing about the ethics or even the mechanics of real journalism, who are being listened to or watched or read on the basis of how dramatic they can make their presentation. And often that means the more dramatic is the less of a hold on reality it has.
So how are people then to distinguish between what is truly fake, inaccurate, or worse, and that which is accurate and real?
Well, the advantage, of course, of the internet today is that it gives people all over the world access to all kinds of extraordinarily good sources of journalism. Pick your own. If you're an English language speaker, it may be a magazine like The Economist in England. It could be the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. It could be, for that matter, Voice of America, which I think works very hard to present an objective statement of reality out there. If you're reading in German, you might be reading the Frankfurter Allgemeine. You might be reading in France, Lord knows, Paris Soir. There are all kinds of very fine news organizations all around the world. You may just have to look a little harder than you did in the past.
You mentioned Germany, among other countries. When I was in Dresden recently, spent a little time there, I became familiar with a word that I didn't know before, Lügenpresse. Now,
the lying press.
That's the technical definition of it. That's the translation. What do you think is the, if there is, the deeper meaning of that phrase, Lügenpresse, or lying press?
The deeper meaning of it is that it's usually conveyed by people in power who don't like having their actions examined too closely by objective observers. If you want to undermine public confidence in what people are writing about you, and if you are doing things that don't really that don't really appreciate closer scrutiny, then the way to undermine public confidence is by calling the media, the press, the lying press.
How are journalists to fight back without becoming themselves part of the story?
I think they have to work very hard and often are not doing so sufficiently in this day and age to remain above the fray. If you are going to be believed as a purveyor of objective facts, you have to try very hard to avoid getting into the game of exchanging opinions or of calling other people names simply because they are calling you names. That's hard to do. It sort of goes back to what your mother and father may have told you when you were a little boy. Just because someone else calls you names doesn't mean that you call them names. Just because they use violence against you doesn't mean that you're justified in using violence against them. That's a very, very hard model to follow. But for journalism to maintain its hold on public confidence, journalists have to work very, very hard at maintaining their objectivity, even when it becomes very, very difficult to do so.
What happens to a country when it loses its free press, when the press becomes either restricted or worse?
Well, there are any number of examples around the world, and rather than focusing attention on countries around the world, I think we had best focus attention on ourselves. A democracy cannot survive in the absence of an objective press corps. If the press allows itself to engage in simply an exchange of vitriol, it's going to be very entertaining, but it is also going to undermine the foundations of what a democracy depends upon. Democracy depends upon a well-educated, a well-informed voting public. And if the voting public can no longer distinguish where the truth lies because the media have become so obsessed with opinion, that's going to lead to the undermining of democracy itself.
Which do you think presents a greater threat to journalism moving forward? And this may not be an either or. Either governmental pressure to limit or police what is said, or economic pressure that forces journalists to perhaps do things or cut things that they don't want to.
They are both existential threats to good journalism. And I think, to be completely honest about it, that we in the United States are more threatened by the economic pressures than we are by the pressures of leaders seeking to undermine public confidence. That's not to say that leaders talking about the fake media and the fake news and the lying press is not dangerous. It is. But what is equally, if not more dangerous, is when journalistic establishments are focused more on profit than they are on providing honest, fact-based journalism.
If I'm interested in bolstering a free press, what kinds of things could I do?
Well, you can support it wherever you find it. And if that means, and I assume that our audience here is largely an international audience, look for the best examples of journalism that you can find and that for linguistic reasons you're able to understand. I think one of the reasons that Americans continue to be very proud of the work that Voice of America is doing is that it has resisted, to a large extent, the temptation to become a propaganda arm of the U.S. government. Should it ever become that, It would lose the confidence that it has among millions of people around the world, and once lost, it's almost impossible to restore.
You speak with students a fair amount, as I understand, either at, I believe, at Syracuse, your alma mater, is that right? Or elsewhere around the country. What are student journalists asking you about these matters of free and independent press?
Well, the same kind of questions you've been asking. I don't think students are in any respect appreciably different from their adult fellow citizens.
Elders.
From their elders. They're worried about what happens in a nation where the press is continually being criticized and undermined. I'm not terribly concerned as long as we continue to have our freedoms intact in the United States. I'm not terribly concerned about the criticism. What concerns me more than the criticism from those who are our enemies or our adversaries is the notion that we will resort to the same tactics in our journalism. We have to remain faithful to what we are meant to do. Cover the news as honestly, as accurately, and as factually as we can. If we stop doing that, and there are many instances of examples now around the country of what poses as journalism but is really simply an exchange of opinions, that's dangerous. That's more dangerous, as far as I'm concerned, than what our critics would do to us.
Finally, you have been an exemplar for decades, and no flattery is meant here, of what it means to be a broadcast journalist. This may be an unfair question, but here it goes. 10 years from now, what does journalism look like?
I honestly have no idea. I am terribly concerned by the reality of the Internet and by the fact that the Internet, for all its many, many virtues, gives access to so many unscrupulous people who are able to spread lies with the same facility and with the same kind of reach that truth and facts are being spread, that it becomes increasingly difficult for the public out there to distinguish between the two. So to the extent that we don't regain some kind of control over the Internet and the social media that it has produced, I look forward 10 or 20 years with some apprehension. I'm hoping that somehow in the near future, we'll find some way of taking what is this brilliant piece of machinery that we have for spreading news and making sure that we are able to maintain our standards at the same time that we expand our reach.
You sound like some of the things I've read of people talking about television back in the 40s.
Yeah, and, we like to look back on those predictions as though they were all wrong. They weren't. If you look back at what news coverage was in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, I would argue that there was a much greater feeling of obligation on the part of the television networks, for example, to produce news that really was a reflection of the most important events in the world and in the country. I used to have an executive producer many years ago who would ask himself and all of us to ask ourselves every day, what's the most important thing going on in the world today? What's the most important thing going on in my country today? What are the most important things going on in my community today? And our responsibility, our obligation was to provide a reflection, an accurate reflection of those things, those events. if you look at newscasts on television networks or on cable TV today, and you ask yourself those same questions, and then look at what is being put out on the air, and ask the follow-up question, are they reflecting the answers to those questions? I fear the answer is, often as not, no, they're not.
Ted Koppel, it has been a genuine pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with our listeners and our audience.
Thank you. It's a great privilege to be able to talk to so many people in so many places.
We hope you'll keep listening to our podcasts. We bring them to you as often as we can. I'm Doug Bernardi in Washington. Until we meet again, take care.